I guess that means we are on. This is Sterling Allen. We are starting a new show called Free Energy Now. This is an adjunct and a longer version of what has been a two-year running This Week in Free Energy with James Arthur Janczyk. This Free Energy Now program is sponsored or hosted by the BBSRadio.com show. It was introduced by Donald Newsom. He called me about 3 or 4 days ago and invited me to start a weekly program. I'm glad to do that. We have plenty of material to talk about, and today we are at the Extraordinary Technology Conference in Salt Lake City. There's been a very well-attended event, almost a sellout, seats 300 people, and sponsored by Tesla Tech, which has been doing this program for many years. I don't know how many years for sure, but it's been a long-running program. Steve Elvick does a fantastic job, and he's actually standing right here. That would be a great introductory interview with Steve Elvick. Steve, I am live on the Internet with, I don't know how big their audience is, but a lot of people, according to Don. And we're doing a live program to interview various presenters at the conference. Steve, as the founder of this, could you tell us how long have you been doing this annual seminar?
I've been doing these annual seminars for about, well, since 1984 in various configurations, like with the International Tesla Society, Exotic Research, and now as the Extraordinary Technology Conference.
Okay, Steve. How well is the attendance this year compared to previous years?
We have about a 30% increase this year.
That's great. Over any previous year?
Our high point would have been in 1996 when we had over 600 people.
Well, trying to get your thoughts on investment.
That's fantastic. He has a great lineup of speakers. I'm just going to pull out the program here and just give you an idea. On Saturday or Thursday evening, he had David Korn talking about identifying and treating end-time diseases. And then Friday, they had Nikola Tesla's Tesla Coils with Jeff Bihari. Then Oliver Nicholson, Tesla's Dynamo Electric Machine. Frank Germano talking about Tesla's Extraordinary Bladeless Disc Turbine. That's the Tesla Turbine, it's also called. Water technology, Brown's Gas, water, fire from water. That was Larry Ode, a very interesting presentation yesterday. Thurston Ludwig talks about getting excess heat with hydrogen. And then today we've had discussions about zero-point energy lectures. We've got out in the hall, there are about 20 presenters, 20 booths with different people talking about everything from water to Brown's Gas to how to convert your car to run on hydrogen. And so this is the Extraordinary Technology Conference, and we're going to be talking to several inventors and people who are in attendance, and why are they here? What are they hoping to accomplish? Tim Ventura, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Sterling. Thank you.
Okay, where are you? You ran off somewhere.
Yeah, we're actually outside. I'm outside with Gabriella, and we're out here because it's a little bit quieter. It's not quite as hectic because it is in the conference arena. But
okay.
As you said, you know, it is definitely buzzing this year, and that's made it somewhat difficult to kind of keep track.
Yeah. Tim Ventura, we're going to be talking to Tim a little bit more further in this show today. Tim Ventura with American Anti-Gravity is our other microphone. He's got a cell phone. We are doing this by cell phone today. And Tim, go ahead and turn the phone over to Gabriella.
Okay.
She is here from Texas. Gabriella, what organization do you represent?
I'm with Astoria Energy Partners out of Dallas, Texas.
And why are you here today? Or actually, not just today. You've been here for the whole conference.
I have been. And I'm actually here for two reasons. One is because there is a similar technology to something that we're investigating. And two is that we are looking for alternative energy companies to invest in.
So now, are you going to be doing investments your company, or do you screen for other organizations?
Actually, just to my company.
Okay. So your company wants to put some cash into some good energy technology, and you're looking for what it is you want to be investing in.
That is exactly correct.
Okay. I'm curious, I mean, not that you're going to represent every investor out there, but at this conference, what has piqued your interest the most?
What has piqued my interest the most? I actually very much enjoyed a presentation by Dr. Thurston Ludwig of Germany.
Uh-huh.
He had it's a hydrogen technology, a hydrogen tube, and that's very interesting. It looks like there's an application in the home heating market,
uh-huh.
which, of course, with electricity prices right now and even gas prices going up so high, that's something that if you can prove its efficiency and that it can save consumers money, that's something that's very interesting to us because it's also a cleaner technology.
If I was in that presentation as well, and he was talking about having some 300 units that are going to be available for purchase for independent verification and replication of this technology to show he was getting, what, a twofold output energy versus the amount of energy he was putting in?
That is what he said, yeah.
Yeah. So very interesting technology. They have a hydrogen cathode where they're converting hydrogen from gaseous or from H to H2, going back and forth, and they're getting excess heat coming out of it. So somehow there's some kind of they're harnessing some energy somewhere in
mm-hmm.
this process. And he theorizes it's zero point energy.
Well, actually, I spoke with him yesterday evening at the social that they held here. And he believes, as we do, because we're dealing with some other hydrogen technologies, that there's actually an exothermic reaction taking place, which does not violate the second law of thermodynamics.
Okay.
So it's not saying, well, we get more energy out than we put in. It's actually saying, well, there's a chemical reaction here taking place, and it's releasing energy, which is
great.
Perfectly legal under, you know, regular scientific laws under just mainstream science.
And that's one of the things that it's somewhat refreshing to hear, because very often in alternative energy, we're wanting to come up with new laws of physics to explain what's happening. And as part of the CUDA is if you've got a technology that breaks the current laws of physics as we know them and you can prove it, then, you know, that's a feather in the hat that your name goes down in the history book. But you're saying that in this case, they're within existing laws of physics.
That's what we believe. It's a hypothesis we're having tested right now on a technology up at the University of Illinois. I have some physicists testing it there right now.
Is it okay to mention the technology you're looking at, or is that something you want to keep private?
Oh, I'll probably keep it private right now.
Okay. That is an interesting... I will mention, I think it would be okay to mention, that it's a technology that has received quite a bit of press recently. Quite a few people have sent me emails about it, asking what they think about it. So, fascinating stuff going on. As you walk away from this conference, well, one thing I have to ask, the ratio of male to female in this field in general and reflected in this conference is very out of balance from, you know, certainly not a 50-50 ratio. There's maybe
not even
one
close.
Female to 20 men. How does it feel to be in this conference and to be female?
Actually, it's exciting for me. I've, you know, being in the finance world, even in finance, females are definitely in the minority. I think it's a lot more exciting if we can get more women involved and say, you know, the math and the science isn't that hard. It's not that hard if you actually look into it. But unfortunately, a lot of women don't think that.
Yeah. Speaking of females, I'm sending Gene Manning out to find you guys. I don't know where you are. Could you wave your hand or something?
Yeah, we're actually right outside the entrance.
Oh, okay, there you are. Gene Manning is coming out to meet you, and we're going to be talking to her next. We appreciate you joining us, and we wish you luck in finding a technology that will both be interesting as well as profitable, and we can bring this energy to the world. So thank you, and keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you, Sterling. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right.
Bye.
And now let's go ahead and turn it over to Gene. Hi, Gene.
Hello.
Okay, we are now talking to Gene Manning. She is an author of several books, one in particular about revolutionary technologies. Tell us the title of your book.
The Coming Energy Revolution It came out in 96, so I'm working on a sequel. And I have a book out in Germany more recently. They also have a translation of the Coming Energy Revolution, and the French translation is out too.
A very good read. It's a good primer, introducing people to the field about what's available, what are some of the claims that are being made, and obviously it's a very dynamic field. The heroes of 5 years ago, some of them are no longer with us. Some of them have died. Some of them have been discredited, have been shown to be frauds. Others are still working at it. What would you say is the attrition of the technologies that were being featured, let's say, 10 years ago? How many of them are still with us, hard at it today?
Not necessarily the ones that I wrote about, but most of the people that I've known in the field are still in it if they haven't passed away, and some of the bright lights have passed away. There are a few who dropped out because they've decided that society just isn't ready for what may be called free energy. And they just got too discouraged by the lack of acceptance, the lack of welcoming on the part of funding sources, the business people who came along with great promises of money and the end of the days, they had just wasted a lot of their time. Years and years this goes on with some people. Others were kind of entrapped into some sort of a business situation that they got into quite naively. You know, inventors are not necessarily gifted in the business field, and some of them are just full of idealism and hope for the future and want more than anything to get their technologies funded so they can get it out to the people. And a lot of them have been taken advantage of by the business sharks.
Let's talk about the title of your book, The Coming Energy Revolution. Is your sequel going to be titled that as well?
I'm thinking The Emerging Energy Revolution, because a lot of progress has been made.
Uh-huh. What made you choose that title, and what's behind that title? Give us a little rundown on your book.
Uh-huh. Well, things have changed in terms of, well, for one thing, international cooperation. With the internet, it's a lot different than it was 10, 15 years ago in terms of people making progress, because they're working, co-working with people that maybe they've never met in person physically, but they share their information on the internet, or they can go to a virtual laboratory like JLN Labs and see a working model of somebody else's prototypes of the same technology. They can, in real time, have discussions on Yahoo groups, and, there's a lot of time wasted on a lot of that, too, but there's also progress made. And that's also spread the awareness. It's certainly not hit mainstream yet, because the mainstream media are so controlled, but out there in the world of cyberspace, there's an increasing awareness about the non-conventional energy alternatives.
Well, I can certainly relate to that, because for me personally, working in alternative energy nowadays, it's almost exclusively via the internet. I don't have a brick and mortar office where I go and clock in each day, so to speak. I can work from home. I can anywhere there's a computer, I can connect into my world of connections internationally. Our New Energy Congress is an international body of people who are experts in the field, and I communicate with them via the internet on a daily basis. And so the actual physical interaction is very lacking in my personal life and something I miss. And so I very much enjoy coming to this conference, seeing people in person for the first time that I've never met before, that I've known intimately through the internet. So the dynamics of the internet has made the energy research and development a very different animal than it was maybe 10, 20 years ago.
Well, you could get that face-to-face, go to one of the conferences in Europe and get a feeling of being a planetary citizen, of humankind striving to better itself. You know, we hear so much about the warring factions, that the tendency for humans to war with one another, but all the examples of cooperation that I run into, and of course, that's emerging too, as things like tsunamis bring out that aspect of human nature. So I have hopes that a groundswell, a grassroots movement, as Steve Kaplan's going to be talking about the new energy movement, will really be a part of this reason that I say it's an emerging energy revolution.
Yeah. What of all the technology, I mean, you've looked at a lot of technologies, and you're part of some very significant movements in the energy, in the new energy movement, is the name of an organization that is actually a 501c3 arm of the New Energy Congress. An official, you know, as of just a few days ago, we cemented that relationship. You're on the board of directors of that organization. You've got this book. You're keeping your head. I mean, this is not a hobby for you. You are doing this. Aren't you eat, drinking, and sleeping this alternative energy? Am I correct?
You're correct. It
certainly
has taken over my life.
Not only are you drinking and sleeping it, you are getting a fire hydrant treatment.
Fire hydrant treatment is right.
I've been trying to get you on the Congress for ever since we founded a year ago, and you've just been too busy. So, you know, you're very involved. And tell me, of all the energy technologies that you see around, maybe you could give us one or two that are most interesting to you. What do you see as being the most promising that is not mainstream, that is not out there in the conventional awareness, that is up and coming, that just has you excited?
Well, what has me excited is not necessarily what everybody would agree is the most promising. And as a general journalist, I really defer to the technical people for advice on this, but I have my favorites, and that's all the in harmony with the biosphere, in harmony with the universe, the Vortexian-based technologies, you know, and implosion-based technologies, because this is a whole way of looking at the world and understanding how energy moves naturally in nature and in the cosmos, and working in harmony with that. People like Nassim Harmeen in Hawaii are providing the theory so we can understand how the universe works, and inventors are making breakthroughs in working with the vortex.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff. For readers that just can't wait to get your next book, are you going to give us any teasers, any kind of a website preface before your book is released?
Oh, Sterling, you'll have the news first. You're the man. You're the man for the news.
We are covering fun stuff every day, but are you going to be giving us some kind of a rundown, a table of contents, some kind of a teaser?
Oh yes, you'll be the first to get that. Just not ready yet. I had a year away from it, not totally, because I've had to write articles every 2 months, but on new energy. But I have had a situation which is now resolved, so I'm back on the project, and I'll just get it out as fast as I can.
Well, good for you. I just take my hat off to you. I actually met you in person, what was it, 2 years ago at this conference?
Right, right.
So
you've done a lot since then. We're breaking up.
Let's see, where was I going with that? You actually stepped across the line in this conference, and you've decided you're going to join the New Energy Congress. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
Oh, right.
About time.
We're going to be having a little brainstorming session after a session that we're sponsoring here at the conference, talking about how to extract energy from ambient heat and also how to convert your car to run on alternate fuels, a doubleheader. The teaser for a five-hour seminar we're going to be doing tomorrow afternoon. If you happen to live in the area where you can drive on up to Salt Lake to the Miller Free Enterprise Center, we encourage you to come and join us. It's going to be a fun presentation, 12:30 to 5:30. But anyway, this evening we're going to be having a brainstorming session, and Gene's going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about what can the New Energy Congress do to help promote alternative energy technologies. and in the way that we're doing it, prioritizing and looking at ranking technology so that people can get an idea of what's real and what is really going to be pushing the envelope the best in all areas, in both in terms of renewability, safe, clean, affordable, reliable, credible, and the politics of science. Oftentimes these inventors are brilliant, but they can't get along with anyone, so that can strike against them in terms of the ranking on our top 100 energy technology. We're looking forward to having you part of that body. Thanks. Welcome
Thank
aboard
you.
Officially on the air.
Thank you, Sterling.
Thanks, Jay.
Okay.
Bye
Next, now.
We're going to talk to Steve. Thank you. Bye. Okay, Steve Kaplan is on the phone now. Steve Kaplan is with the New Energy Movement. What role do you play with that organization?
I'm executive director.
The executive director, and that organization has been around, 3 years?
Yeah, we got started, it was founded under the leadership of Dr. Brian O'Leary, a very distinguished physicist and former science astronaut on a Mars mission that never got off the ground with the Vietnam competition with Vietnam financing. But Dr. Brian O'Leary founded it with Alden Bryant, a climate change activist, and then many of us came on later. And essentially, we're still largely a volunteer organization, although we're beginning to get funding. We had a kickoff conference in Portland, Oregon, in September 2004, attended by over 300 people throughout the country.
I remember that conference. We had some people from the Pure Energy Systems Network attend that and report. Susan Carter and Tim Cullen attended that, took careful notes, and we actually reported on each one of your speakers. And so I was very intimate. I didn't attend that myself, but I was heavily involved in the editing and posting of those stories, and that was an excellent conference, on a par with this conference that we're at today.
The summary of the speakers at that conference is there's a link on the homepage of our website, newenergymovement.org. And what we try to do is relates very much to the function of the New Energy Movement. Give the public, interested public, an overview of what's happening here in the field and how they can become involved and support this whole effort. Because one of the big problems is it's still not well enough known. As it becomes more well known, inventors and scientists who are doing excellent work in this field can get the capital and other forms of support that are so badly needed.
There's a saying that I have on most of our websites to the effect that he who is one step ahead is a genius, he who is two steps ahead is a crackpot. And the idea being that when you're really out there far ahead of things, you know, you view it as a crackpot.
Unfortunately, many of the established scientists in our country are taking the same attitude towards new energy as they did when the Wright brothers first started to fly. When the Wright brothers started to fly, there were people who saw them in the air and went to the newspapers. And the newspapers said, well, we can't report that because our scientists tell us that man can't fly. The same thing is really happening in the early stages of research and development here. Very established scientists, not all of them, but many of them, unfortunately, some of the most prestigious, are saying that this can't be because it violates laws of physics. Well, there's a revolution going on in physics, and the experimental data is showing that there needs to be a revision of some of those laws, or there's a misunderstanding on the part of the scientists about whether or not these new experimental findings really do violate laws.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things we're trying to portray to the public is there's a range of very respectable scientists and inventors who have a different story to tell in this whole field.
that's basically your core mission, is to bridge the two steps ahead and the public so that it's only one step ahead, so you turn the crackpot into a genius. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And the other part of it is to take the different organizations, including the New Energy Congress that you have pushed forward so well, and Tesla Tech that is sponsoring this conference, and Integrity Research Institute in Washington, D.C., which is having a major conference on future energy September 22nd and 24th, co-sponsored by the New Energy Movement, to take these organizations and have all of them work together to have a kind of synergism that will create more power and more visibility in this field.
Well, that's great. Steve, I really appreciate the work you're doing. Steve is a member of the New Energy Congress, was one of the founding members and influential in the launch of the New Energy Congress, as well as we mentioned, the New Energy Movement. Thanks for joining us today. I'm sure we'll be having you on again in the future. We now have, they're next to you, sitting there on the rock. You guys are outside. I'm inside because there's a delay on the phone. It really messes you up when you're in the same room and you hear yourself talking both, you know, there's a really good echo that goes on. So you guys are outside. I'm inside here. Sitting there next to you on the rock is Xenia Rice. Go ahead and put her on. Xenia, are you on?
Hello.
Hi, Xenia.
Yes.
We are very glad to, I just met Xenia like 10 minutes ago. Or I guess it's been about half an hour or something like that.
Yeah.
It seems like that. Maybe it was an hour ago, but it was not long. And Xenia came to me with a passion. What were you so passionate about? Let's hear it.
Well, it's very simple. It's our life. It's our living right now on the planet. I would like to speak to every human being that is living on the planet at this moment and all of nature. Everyone knows we're living in extreme heat wave that's breaking all recorded records. Hundreds have already perished in America this year, and last year 35,000 died in Europe. Yeah.
35,000 people died because of heat in the last year. Where did you get that information?
Well, actually, the latest has been, I remember the news last year as it was happening, but I didn't know the final number until just a couple of weeks ago. I come around across the movie. And the worst of it is that this heat is going up. It's not going to go anywhere but up every year unless we do something about it.
There's a lot of skeptics about linking the heat that may seem just seasonal. It's just a little blip on the radar. But that's not true, according to who?
Well, there's a movie out right now that shows a chart, a detailed explanation of
what's
why
the name of that movie?
The movie is An Inconvenient Truth.
And we've all heard that title. It's been promoted in the media. It's been talked about in articles, especially in alternative energy. And I would imagine anyone tuning into the show has heard the title, An Inconvenient Truth. And I would imagine most everyone at this conference has heard about that movie. What has been your experience as you've gone around to talk to people and have asked them, have they seen that movie?
Well, this is very shocking to me. But then, on the other hand, I should understand why very clearly, because I myself been environmental actively through about 30 years, but all my life altogether. When I heard about the movie too, I thought, yeah, global warming, I've heard it left and right, you know, everybody knows. I'm not even going to go to the movie myself. And I had to look at myself. I thought, what? Why am I not going to go to the movie? And it's because I simply said, I know it already. But I did go, and actually I couldn't wait to go because curiosity, if nothing else, but just see what's up, what's the latest, because it is what's happening on our planet right now. This is very powerful and very well made, explains clearly and thoroughly with detailed charts, statistics, why the weather patterns have changed and what we can do to stop it. Al Gore narrates, and with his researchers, did a terrific job of putting together. It's breathtaking, stimulating, itch of the seat type of film. 928 reports from all over the world were accumulated for this. And it's just shocking. I mean, it's nothing that you don't know, but it's more than we ever thought we knew, my point of view. And
you
I'm
were
just
obviously
passionate.
Very impacted by this movie. You thought that, you know, you if it's, I mean, I'm going to talk from my point of view, okay? I certainly plan on watching that movie. It's one that I, if not in the movie theater, at least the dollar theaters, I was going to get the movie and watch it as a DVD and be able to have it in archives at home. It's a movie I planned on getting around to, but after listening to you, I have moved up in the priorities in my life to watch that movie as soon as possible. Why do you think that's
crucial.
Important? Why should we watch it now in the theaters, pay some extra money? It's not an entertaining movie. You usually think of going to the movies to see something
right.
that you want the big screen effect. There's a timing
okay.
issue. Why do people want to get up off their seat and watch that movie as soon as possible?
Because every day now we are living with this 100-degree heat, and we can't wait 6 months from now to do something about it. People are dying. Animals, we don't even know. When you see this movie, it makes it so clear. And I see this as a must-see. It's not just a film to go to see, but it's a film to take, go see, must-see with your spouse, your children, their spouses, and your grandchildren. This is their future, and it's up to us right now. And we can do something. That's the best part, because we can do something. And
so
truly, alone is very hard, but together we can.
So you're saying that there is an urgency here, that Mother Earth, whatever you want to call it, this responsibility that we have to take care of this planet, that there is an urgency. Every minute we wait is another
yeah.
life lost somewhere, whether it's an animal or a human or even a plant that's burning up because of the heat. That
exactly.
this is an upward spiral. It's not just a gradual increase. That this thing is starting to go up almost on the beginning of an exponential curve, that we have to do something to turn
oh,
things
yeah.
around. And you are driven, and not only do you want to talk about it, you want to do something about it. And so
yeah.
we decided we were going to, you know, just you and me talking there at the table, we said, here's an idea. Let's just brainstorm this. And we actually hatched the plot of what you can do, Xenia, as being part of our network. We want to have you on this weekly show, this show that we're doing today. We want to have as a weekly show. Having on different guests, different inventors, sometimes monologue, just have talking about what is available in free energy, what is coming down the pike, what's available right now, what's 1 year away, what's 10 years away. And
exactly.
as part of each show, we plan to have Xenia on and talk about what can we do today on a practical level. This is something that we plan on having as a regular feature, giving you about 5 minutes to talk about as a mother, as a woman in this normally male-dominated field, a very practical tip about the females in the listening audience to kind of reach out and touch them. Could you maybe talk about that for a second?
Yes, this is the thing about basis, getting the movie as a basis, because from there we can really talk, because when you really see the truth, and that's what it is, the truth, and it's an inconvenient truth, because it takes us out of our comfort zone a little bit, at least at this time, and makes us take action. It's not about talking anymore, and it's got to be action. And there are different tips that are given in the film of what can be done. But it's general. We need to have what we can do, where to go buy a light bulb. Say there are light bulbs, and we need to know the name of it, what size, what store. A simple thing like that is just one step, and go on and on from there, because we can do something about it. And it's really exciting, because there's such a hopelessness and a fear. We don't have to have any of that. It's positive, and we just have to take action. And the tips and ideas, and maybe from a woman's perspective, mother of our children, it's got to be there.
Yeah, we decided, we may not go with this name, but we thought the name Mother's Energy Tips by Xenia would be a good name for your segment each week, as you give us some tips, mm-hmm. some practical doable, very approachable things that we can go out and do right now. And would you say that today's tip is to go watch that movie?
100%, 150%, whatever. All the way, please. It's a must. Just don't go see. It's a must. It's part. It's our life. It's our children's life. Our animals. Everybody.
I'm very impressed with Xenia. She's got passion. She is a mother, and she feels for mothers everywhere, and wants to help people have doable, actionable things that you can do to make a difference. Thanks, Xenia, for being on today. We'll look forward to next week.
My blessings, so.
Now we're going to have Tim on. Tim Ventura is with American Anti-Gravity. Tim and I go quite a ways back together in this. It seems like a long time, even though it's been, what, maybe 3 years?
Yeah, I think it's probably just about 3 years, Sterling.
Yeah, Tim is a webmaster. I'm a webmaster. We both are running fairly major sites in our various fields. He's in anti-gravity, and I'm in alternative energy, free energy, cutting-edge technology development. We have quite a bit of overlap, and you'll see things that we talk about over in his news and vice versa. Very often we will feature stories that he writes. You're working on some fun stuff right now.
Yeah, actually, Tesla Tech is a little bit of a break for me. You know, as I'm sure you mentioned before, I run AmericanAntiGravity.com, and that's just www.AmericanAntiGravity.com. And we're a little bit different site. We're more of space media, I think, than energy media. But we do cover a little bit of energy, and of course, you know, pure energy systems. You know, yourself over at Sterling, or yourself over at your site, Sterling, cover a little bit of space stuff. So there's an overlap there. For our stories, I was really excited to just publish one on Aurora with Paul Siss, and he was actually the chief scientist on the Reagan-era National Aerospace Plane Project. He's retired now, and so he's a little more open to doing media work than he has been in the past, and he's describing schematics from the 50s that lay out a real technological lineage for the Aurora project. You know, one of the thoughts I'd always had, like many other people, I read an article by Bill Sweetman on Aurora in Popular Science in 1994. And it was a really well-done article, but it left a lot of loose ends hanging. And so this is kind of one of the many stories that we're trying to follow up on and hopefully provide a little bit more depth and a little bit more insight and hopefully a little bit of educational value for the audience.
Sounds great. You know, I just thinking to myself here as we're at the technology, Extraordinary Technology Conference in Salt Lake City, you were a speaker here last year.
No, I was last year, and Steve Ellswick asked me if I'd put together a presentation for this year, although I didn't ask him to hold time for me, so if I come up short, I may be just filling in for someone.
Uh-huh. So are you going to be presenting this year as well?
Well, I'm definitely hoping to. One of the major areas of the presentation that I've laid out involved a trip up to see John Hutchison, the legendary Canadian inventor. And as you know, he's had anti-gravity effects and all sorts of really strange, unique occurrences in his lab. It's difficult to quantify.
He is one of the most fascinating people out there. Just really, really interesting stuff. I've seen video footage where you see a glass of water sitting there, and the water starts floating out of the glass.
Yeah. Now, our focus, he didn't have his lab set up when we visited. He has it set up as kind of show props, you know, but the functional equipment, a lot of it was shelved or just not tuned. What we did get to see was material samples, and those were incredibly interesting. He had bars of aluminum that had turned to putty and been pulled apart like some kind of a children's Play-Doh at room temperature. There was no residue from heating. He's had pieces of wood melt into metals at room temperature. He's had steel and aluminum, weld themselves together. You know, again, all of this stuff happens. He had a hand file that actually melted in his hand once on camera, you know. And so he has the remains of all these experiments lying around. And we were able to get a lot of close-up photos of those. And
doesn't he also have some kind of a rock battery or an earth battery?
You know, he does, although that wasn't really the focus of our trip up there. John has really become kind of a close friend to both you and myself over the last couple of years. And he was, you know, happy to have us up, but we really had kind of a limited time to be up there, so we tried to focus on the material samples.
You know, I'm going to wax practical here for a minute because that's what we try and do at the New Energy Congress. And you know, he's actually, even though he's got a lot of really cool, real stuff, he does not register on our top 100 energy technologies, and there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, his main area of advancement is in anti-gravity, and that's not really an area that we're focused on in the New Energy Congress, unless it impinges on a practical energy solution. You know, we're looking at things that are reliable, renewable, safe, practical, credible, and the politics of science that, you know, it's not impinged by some impossible inventor who's impossible to work with, or there's some lawsuit over the ownership of the IP that ties up the even though it might be a feasible technology, no one can do anything with it because there's a big argument about who owns it. But along those criteria, his battery, even though it might work, might put out a few watts. It's not practical yet. There's nothing that we can say, yeah, this is going to be revolutionizing the energy field in the next 5 years. But there's also an element, a personal element. John is a very interesting bloke, and while it's fun to put him on a camera and watch things float out of a glass or whatever, it's really difficult to get a business relationship going with him. What would you say about that?
Well, I would say, and I hope no one interprets this in a negative way, and I should also encourage the audience, they should just do a Google search on Hutchison Effect. I have, I think, 5 or 6 video clips online, different video clips from different eras. All of his original work that's been aired is pretty much from the early 1980s. The camera work was shot by Dr. George Hathaway. He does have some newer material that's just starting to come out. Again, he's getting new effects, and we have a little bit of that up. So that'll help the audience familiarize themselves with really where he's going and where he's coming from in terms of his innovations. I think you're right. I think Hutchison, for lack of a better word, you could almost call it a random effects generator. There are 5 or 6 effects that are rolled together and quite nearly inseparable. Levitation, melting of materials. He's had materials turn invisible on camera and then reappear before. And these aren't special effects. They've been analyzed. In fact, Stanford Research Institute, as I recall, had a team out with several scientists. I believe 2 of them were nuclear physicists. And they spent days, or actually months, working with him in the 1980s. And at the end of the day, they couldn't explain it, nor could they harness it into a controlled energy technology, which I think goes back to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It is difficult sometimes to...
Interesting, but it's not practical.
Yeah, and the hope is, I've actually been advocating, and again, I've some kind of an in vitro study for Hutchison. It sounds kind of cold, but the idea had been...
Let's go ahead and move on to another subject really quick, just for the sake of time today. I wanted to...
Oh, sure.
You were talking about some really fascinating stuff when we were in the hall the other day, stuff I'd never heard of before. It's an article you're working on. You haven't published it yet. Can you give us a little whet our appetite? What's your next article about on energy?
Absolutely. Well, it's a company called Proton 21, and they're out of the Ukraine, and I have to admit a little bit of ignorance myself on this. I'm just starting to get the interview together, so I have most of my notes, but I'm still reading through them and categorizing them. And I wouldn't want to say anything offhand that would you know, I guess be a mischaracterization based on my own ignorance. But the way I got involved with this was an acquaintance of mine really told me about this company he had visited in the Ukraine that was doing remarkable work and getting some really interesting anomalies. He pointed me their way, and then we did a giant written interview. And they sent back some photos also. Now, the research they're doing involves a copper electrode. And essentially, they're using an enormous spark gap system. So if you can imagine a piece of copper, or 2 pieces of copper, I guess, pointed at each other, and they're hitting that with a gigawatt pulse. Which sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but they're using a mark generator for it. So basically, the copper looks like it's creating some kind of a fusion effect inside of itself when this electric discharge happens. And that's something that wouldn't be predicted by conventional physics. And that would be some kind of a low-energy nuclear reaction. You know, Gene Loeb's classic LENR stuff. Although this time, not in water, not with palladium, in copper, in a discharge chamber. So if this case holds, they may have found a new way of doing controlled fusion for energy production.
Huh. When do you think they might have something that would be practical in terms of an energy harnessing for, use in some applications?
Well, it's an interesting question, Sterling. As you know, different inventors and different innovation companies approach it from different angles. And in this particular case, Proton 21 is staffed by, you know, laboratory experienced PhD scientists, and they tend to take things one step at a time. So they had been financed by a large firm either in their country or in Russia for a number of years, I think a construction company, if I remember right. And they really focused on the baseline results. You know, what are we getting here when we hit this electrode with the current, and can we come up with some explanations for why? So it's a very rigorous type of research they've done, and consequently, I think progress is slower on being able to commercialize that, you know, especially in comparison to more of your independent inventor who looks more at the commercial side and less sometimes at the theory.
Uh-huh. Very fascinating, Tim. It's always interesting talking to you. You have a really nice-looking website. You do a good presentation in your PDF files and whatnot that you pull together. I take my hat off to you and your presentation. You do a really good job. We're going to have Ty Robinson on here. He's actually going to be presenting here in a few minutes at the Congress, or at the conference. He is a member of the New Energy Congress, a founding member. I interviewed him last year. He spoke at the conference. He is going to be talking about how to convert your vehicles to run on hydrogen and other alternative fuels, like seven different fuels. And sitting out here in front of the conference, he's wondering what's going on because he sees me, but he doesn't see the other phone. There is a Toyota Tacoma and a Humvee that have been converted to run on hydrogen. The Humvee's got it's bright yellow, very well decorated, and it says hydrogen across the hood. And in the back are two hydrogen tanks. Ty, what would happen if somebody were to rear-end you in that Humvee?
Well, I could make a pretty bad joke right now, but actually, hydrogen is much safer when it's stored in high-pressure storage vessels. The storage tanks that hold hydrogen or the compressed natural gas or any blend of the two in the Hummer are impervious to puncture. They're bulletproof. They're rocket launcher proof. If that truck was run over by a train, the only thing left would be the tanks, and the tanks would still be holding fuel. If you were able to violate the tank, though, and get a pinhole leak or get a small crack in it and have the fuel leak out, it's lighter than air, so that it would go up and out. It would go into the air. It would be about 20 feet above our head before it combined with enough oxygen to be combustible. So if you were in an accident, you did get a leak, and you did have an ignition source up there 20 feet above your head where the fuel was combustible, it would burn off within just a couple minutes, and everybody down on the ground would be safe and unharmed. Whereas that poor gasoline vehicle that ran into you and their gasoline spilling all over the ground and is now ignited from a spark and is going to burn for a couple hours, those poor folks are going to burn to a crisp, while the people in the hydrogen vehicle are going to be happily walking away.
You know, your answer that you gave just now is typical of my experience in talking to you. People are concerned about, you know, well, how do you do that? How do you do this? We talked to Ty, and Ty has a very level-headed answer that's like, oh, should have known. That's incredible. And not necessarily should have known, but it's you're very knowledgeable in this field. And what are you going to be talking about? You're going to be doing a three-hour presentation here on Sunday. What's that about?
Well, I hope that's enough time to cover all the options that people have in this country. Right now we have seven cleaner fuels available all around the country for less than the price of gasoline or diesel.
How much less?
Tell us about those, boy. You know, the infrastructure is all over the country, and it's been there for a long time because, in reality, we're coming back full circle to these fuels. A lot of people call them alternative fuels or alternative fuel vehicles, and I use the same initials, but I call them American fuel vehicles because if we use that name alternative, it's always going to be on the sidelines. It's never going to be mainstream. And in actuality, it was gasoline and diesel that were the real alternatives because the very first automobile in the planet was an electric vehicle. It was used with batteries and an electric motor. After that, the very first automobile with an internal combustion engine was burning hydrogen. The patent for that automobile was secured in 1809. We've progressed a bit beyond that. Nicholas Otto in the 1870s developed the four-stroke internal combustion engine, again to run on hydrogen. Then we had Rudolf Diesel, who developed the compression ignition engine, and he chose peanut oil. That was his favorite oil to fuel to run in. And Henry Ford was all about the American farmer. He used soy-based paints and corn fiber filler for your seat cushions and convertible top, and he filled the tank with ethanol. Well, these are the fuels that engines were designed to run on, and they were local, they were clean, they were inexpensive. Well, then we had this petroleum byproduct that they wanted to get rid of, and the people, the men that were in power at the time, were able to force that upon us, and that's what our current infrastructure is based on, is a byproduct that they wanted to get rid of. Well, now we're coming back to these, coming back full circle to these original fuels, the hydrogen, the natural gas, the biodiesel, the ethanol, the propane, the electric vehicles, because of economic reasons. All of these fuels are cheaper today than the petroleum fuels. They also happen to be cleaner and safer, and they support our local economy. So no matter how you look at it, you're going to be doing yourself a lot more good by choosing local.
So the conversion to clean energy, it actually saves a person money.
You got it. There's going to be an upfront cost if you want to upgrade your vehicle to run on, say, natural gas, which is a great choice because around the country it's predominantly $1, $1.50 less per gallon. But you also go up to 18% further on a gallon equivalent of natural gas than you do gasoline. So it's cheaper, it's cleaner, and you go farther on it. So say in Utah, for example, if you fill up with a gallon equivalent of natural gas, it costs $1.23 today, but you go 18% further, that translates into a mile per mile basis. Natural gas is going to be about a quarter of the price of using gasoline. So that saves you money, keeps that money in your pocketbook, and the money you are spending is going right here to our local economy.
Well, that's fantastic. We appreciate you coming on with us, Ty, and it's a pleasure working with you on the Congress. You've been a great contribution there. A very active member of the Congress. That's newenergycongress.org, which is piggybacked at pesweeki.com, which is one of our four major websites at the PES network. The PES Wiki site is a publicly editable site. You can go in there if you see something that maybe as a typo, you can correct it. You can add information. You can you make new pages. And that's why we have the New Energy Congress website hosted there, because it is a dynamic website that can be built, expanded. We also have our freeenergynews.com website for our daily news, PESN.com for our feature stories, and pureenergysystems.com, which is a kind of a corporate website, the homepage for all of those. A lot of fun resources there. Thanks for having us on this show. We thank the BBSRadio.com resource, and we look forward to next week, each Saturday from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock Pacific time. That's, convert that to whatever time zone you're in. Come to freeenergynews.com or any of these other websites for an update on a daily basis, and join us each week for this live radio broadcast. Come again next week. Thank you.